Welcome back into the Red Zone Podcast. My name is Colton Bartholomew, UW football beat reporter here for the Wisconsin State Journal, joined by longtime basketball and football beat reporter Jim Polzine. And it has been a week, gang. It has been a wild week, both for the football team and the basketball team. It's kind of hard to keep the schedule straight. Everything seems to be up in the air for the next 15-ish days or so. So, Jim, even more than football, where there's just one game, Jim's got, you know, one game getting moved, another game getting added, teams coming across the country. Just, this is pretty nuts, Jim.
It really is. And we'll get into that later. But like, I started this week not knowing whether I would cover 0, 1, or 2 basketball games. And I guess like, as we sit here at 9 o'clock on Wednesday, I really don't know that yet, because the thing everybody has to remember is these games can get called off day of if there's a positive test. So, you know, I guess I don't know that answer, but right now it's looking like 1, possibly 2, and who knows? It's 2020 in a nutshell. I think we say that every week.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's 9 o'clock on Wednesday morning. Jim is planning on going to the call center this afternoon to watch the Badgers in Rhode Island, but we'll see what happens.
I do love these matinee games, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, keep them up. It's fun for me too, because I'm working, just throw the game on in the background. It's kind of like back in the baseball season where there's just a random game that they throw on TV because they needed the content. I'm a fan as well. All right, so we have a ton of stuff to talk about, as we kind of alluded to there, but give you a quick show rundown. We're going to preview this Iowa game for the football team. Offensively, the big thing is, you know, how did they, you know, turn this thing around, because it has been 2 bad showings. Jim researched this during the game, but it's their worst 2-game scoring stretch since 1991. I wasn't alive for one of those games. Fun fact, I got born the week.
My gosh, I hate you. Let's end this podcast now.
Fair enough. But then going into the defense against Iowa, the big thing is, can they keep up what they've been doing? Because even as the offense has been pretty abysmal, the defense has kept them in a game, or kept them in these games. And when you consider what they just did to the Indiana passing game, obviously you factor in the backup quarterback being in there, but still with those receivers really taking them out of the game for the most part, really impressive showing by the defense. And got to keep that up against Iowa, who's kind of on a roll. We're going to get into all of the stuff that's going on in the Big Ten, where, you know, Ohio State situation, Indiana and Purdue might get called off this weekend. We're going to get into all that, because it might not affect Wisconsin per se, but it's the Big Ten as a whole. And, you know, it could affect who Wisconsin plays next week in Champions Week here in the Big Ten. Get to our picks, second to last week of picks there, and then go into a little bit of basketball, a little bit more into that wild week we just kind of alluded to, how this Rhode Island game came to be out of nowhere and stuff like that. So lots of stuff to get into, and we'll be getting into all of it right after this. All right, Jim, let's jump right into this offense against Iowa for this week. When you go back and watch these games and you really start trying to figure out what's going wrong with this offense, I think the 2 things that kind of jump out to me is – there's some inconsistency from Graham Mertz, which you have to expect as a redshirt freshman. And you just kind of have to live with that when the guy's kind of going through it and learning. It didn't seem like it when you go back and look at the Illinois game that there was going to be a much of a learning curve, but now we've seen Illinois' defense is pretty bad. And Michigan's that the week after that, or the game after that, was pretty bad as well. So against the better defenses, Graham Mertz still has some room to grow and some things to learn. But I think the other thing of it is that they're kind of not sticking with one particular thing, or their identity just hasn't been quite as firmly established as it was in the past. And I mean that in the running game, because obviously when you got Jonathan Taylor, you have to give him the ball 20, 25 times a game at least. I'm not saying Jalen Berger is Jonathan Taylor, but of the backs you have right now on the Wisconsin roster, he is the most talented, and he does the most with the ball in his hand. And to me, it just doesn't seem like they're willing yet to commit to him getting those same type of carries. And I think when you don't have that workhorse, or they have that kind of steady force at the running back position that you're committing to, it's affecting what Wisconsin does across the board on offense.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Like, the lack of identity this far into the season is jarring. And And I say that I kind of went back and forth with some people on Twitter this week. Mm-hmm. And when you say this far into the season, I think one important thing to remember, and it's not making excuses, but it's true, is that they've played four games. Mm-hmm. Sometimes which they've gone weeks, 2 weeks or a week between games. They were playing an Indiana team that had played six games compared to their three going into last week. And I do think that that's an advantage. If you've got six games under your belt compared to half that at this point of the season, I just think that's an advantage. I think that it's so much easier to build continuity, especially on offense, which where I think it's, I do think it's easier to play defense this year than offense. And maybe overall it's easier to play defense. I just think offense is so much about continuity and finding an identity. And then you add to the mix playmakers missing week by week and not having the same identity week to week, I think is the difficult thing. I do agree with you on it seems like Berger should have more carries and you kind of feel that throughout the game, but then you look at the end of the game and he's got 15 carries and 15 carries and 15 carries every week. And it seems like he should get more. And I haven't sat and broken down specifically where those carries should be coming from. Is he gaining 5 or 6 yards on first down and they're going away from him? I don't know. I haven't sat there and dissected it that much, but you know, it's just, it feels that way. It looks that way. So it's, you know, I'm guessing it's probably true.
Yeah. We will get to that in a second because there is something that's weird about how he's getting used. But I think we should definitely mention the injuries because I think that has robbed the offense of some of its identity because without Danny Davis and Kendrick Pryor being healthy, Kendrick Pryor played last week against Indiana, but he didn't play against Northwestern. Danny Davis hasn't played since the Michigan game. Without those guys, they don't seem to be comfortable running the jet sweeps. And that has eliminated what was super effective, not only as the actual jet sweep play where you actually give the ball to the receiver coming across, but the motion that the jet sweep is like when you're not actually running the ball or handing off the jet sweep, you can't run that motion a bunch and expect the defense to really react to it. Not having that, I think has allowed linebackers to kind of sit in the middle or sit inside the box and not have to worry about what's going on left to right and kind of just worry about what's in front of them. I think that's hurt. And then I think just also you lose playmakers like that and wide receiver was going to be a thin group as it was coming into this year. Especially just the way that they haven't been able to develop those guys. So the injuries there are tough, but at the same time, I think it kind of just goes into the lack of identity that this team has had. And circling back to your point, Jim, about where Berger is being used, that's the thing that I don't quite understand because in both the Northwestern and the Indiana games, he's popped off some big runs. Like there's two sequences that stick out in my mind. There's the Indiana game. He had a 19-yard run that got Wisconsin down about the 38-yard line for Indiana. And then he gets taken out, and the next two plays are a fullback run for Mason Stocky and then Garrett Groshek. I'm not saying Jalen Berger's at the point where you've got to run him every play or anything like that, or that Stocky or and Groshek don't seem to deserve touches because they've been productive as well. But to me, it's like there's a hot hand here and a guy that's just got the most – skills with the ball in his hand or the most speed, most explosiveness. I just didn't quite understand that from the offense as a whole of, you know, this is working, but then we move away from it really fast. That's the thing to me where as a fan, I know it's frustrating. We see it on Twitter, fans don't get it. And then just as a media member covering it, it's like, I fail to see the logic in that.
I think I said that too during the game, didn't I? Like, yeah. You know, we're pretty far apart. We got masks on, but I was kind of like, I thought it was very odd. It was odd to start the game when two of their first three plays are fullback dives, you know, and they've had success with fullback dives over the years. So I don't want to like downplay production from that position. But again, like, I think you're right. Like establishing Berger early and getting him in a rhythm and then sticking with them seems, you know, like the logical thing to do. Going back to your point about the jet sweeps, I think one thing they had a lot of success against that against Michigan. One thing important to remember is Michigan was without its two best defensive players, both defensive ends, essentially that game. I think that dictated a lot what happened. They rushed for over 300 yards that game. And I think that was a pretty major reason because I was looking through the stats yesterday. Michigan's defense is not bad. I know it seemed bad that night. Yeah. I mean, they're like fifth in total defense in the Big Ten. So they've gotten better. And I think part of that has to do with not having Pay and Hutchinson that game. And that really allowed Wisconsin to kind of do some things over and over and over and well. So, to your point about not wanting to put, not having options for the jet sweep, I don't think they were going to put Kendrick Pryor in the position of having to get hit on jet sweeps a lot. Yeah. And he says he's coming off a head injury. I know I saw a lot of people, you know, saying, well, give DK the ball. I don't know. Yeah. I don't think he's the jet sweep guy that you want there. And then you're left with Jack Dunn. You know, it's just your options for the jet sweep are limited, and your options in general, once you take Danny Davis out of the lineup, are somewhat limited. I mean, what's better, going out of the 11 package with Davis, Pryor, and DK at receiver and Ferguson at tight end, or at the end of the game, by the fourth quarter the other day, they're going with the 11 package of DK, Dunn, and AJ Abbott and Ferguson. And Ferguson, I don't think, is completely healthy the way we
saw. No, he's definitely not. He's banged up right now.
Right. So, I mean, I don't want to make excuses for Joe Rudolph. I know we're going to get into that, who's calling the plays now. But he is operating a little bit with his left hand tied behind his back or his right hand, whichever. I think people want creativity. I understand that. I think it's difficult, given the personnel right now, to be real creative.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great point. Let's get into Rudolph here, because it was confirmed this week by Paul Chris that Joe Rudolph, the offensive coordinator and offensive line coach, is calling the plays this year. Paul Chris isn't. And Chris's reasoning, I think, was pretty fair when he was talking about it Monday, in that this summer was so weird and he had so much stuff to deal with from a program level, and then, you know, getting football back. You know, I think we talked about it on the podcast, but Paul Chris was pretty instrumental behind the scenes among the coaches and talking to the Big Ten presidents and chancellors and those committees of helping bring football back when all that happened earlier this fall. So all that's going on. He basically said, I didn't have the time to prep and to really dive into the offense the way that you need to do as an offensive play caller. So he let Joe Rudolph do that, and now that's why he's calling plays this year. And ever since that's come out, you know, people have been critical of why this play, why that play. I personally don't think it's the plays. I think it's the rotation of players, like I just mentioned with Berger in the backs, but then just the not having enough guys on offense that you can trust at the receiver position, really at running back, and that's mostly because of health, but you've seen Nakia Watson in and out of the lineup, Isaac Grendo in and out of the lineup, Groshek out of the in and out of the lineup. Berger missed the first game with some minor injuries. So I think it's just you haven't been able to consistently get the rotation that you want, have the guys that you want out there, and then we keep saying it, but the continuity of this offense just hasn't been there. And then when you don't have an identity on offense, you're not able to call one play to set up another or call one concept to set up another. You're kind of just throwing things out there and seeing what works. And then when you don't have big play receivers yet, I mean, maybe DK gets to that point at a certain point in his career. I don't think he's quite there yet. Danny Davis hasn't been healthy, like we mentioned, and Pryor's never been a huge play guy, but he's been consistent. But like we mentioned, in and out of the lineup, you just don't find a flow, and the offense struggles like it has. And then you combine all of that with a quarterback that's missing some guys and learning on the fly here. It's a bad kind of soup here. That's all kind of contributing. There's so many reasons, and the final product as an offense is just not scoring.
Right. And I think the bottom line is their margin for error is so thin right now. And I said this during the game the other night, and I think you're right about it. They're not getting chunk plays at all. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, and very, very seldom are getting chunk plays, and certainly not the 40, 50 yard variety. And what that does is you're over and over and over, you're seeing these, when they do get scoring drives, they're 13, 14, 15 plays. And it just, you're opening yourself up for the chance to screw up at some point. It's hard to put together those drives over and over.
Yeah, there's a reason that's what defenses want to force you to do. You know, that's the goal of a lot of defenses, to make you grind it out and make you earn every point, as opposed to getting one busted coverage and scoring a touchdown.
Right. And so a bend but don't break. And so what we saw the other night against Indiana is that game can very much be simplified into both teams had drives that got them in the red zone. Indiana twice took advantage, made plays on, I think third down both times to score touchdowns. Wisconsin couldn't finish drives and had to settle for field goals. There's your difference right there. I mean, it was a pretty evenly played game. Indiana wins because they executed better in the red zone. And I'll add, had more playmakers to work with, a better receiving core, a more established running back, while Wisconsin didn't capitalize in the red zone. And that, if those results are flipped, Wisconsin wins that game, and albeit not pretty, but they win that game. And it's a different, completely different outlook.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess this is kind of a basic question, Jim, but do you think this is a week that it can get better? I mean, we'll find out hopefully later this week, some of the health of guys, see if Danny Davis can be back in the lineup, what they happen to do at center with, we don't have it confirmed yet, but it looked like a season ending injury for Caden Lyles. We'll see what happens. But with some of the guys that are going to be hopefully returning for this offense, do you think this is a week that it can turn around against an Iowa defense that's, I wouldn't say it's great, but it's playing better in the last 5-6 weeks. And then it knows what it is. Like, it's going to take away the run. And then if you beat it with the pass, they're going to live with it.
Right. And I really think it's an Iowa defense that's not going to give up the big play. Right. I mean, that's, yeah, we're talking about spend but don't break and make you earn it defense. That's always been Iowa. And these games have always been tough because of that. So my short answer is no, I don't see it changing this week. Now, if Danny Davis is back, if they can get Ferguson back to health, if Graham Mertz makes the passes that he hasn't been making, like you said, yeah. And they can score, and they can, if they take advantage of when they get in the red zone. Yes. I just think it's such a fine line with some of these games that if you execute at the right time, things look a whole lot better at the end of the day. But I think it's going to be difficult. I really do. And the one area we haven't touched on, and for anybody that thinks that, I'm being soft on Joe Rudolph for his play calling, listen to this. I'm going to point out that I don't think the offensive line has been very good this year. And that is absolutely on Joe Rudolph. Now, I don't know if that's a result of, again, continuity, not having guys in and out of practice, and you can't build up any cohesion. If you're playing only 4 games in 7 weeks, as opposed to back to back, I think that's probably difficult to build chemistry and synergy on the offensive line, which is so important. But I don't think that group's been that great. And I don't know why exactly that is. That's, you know far more about that than me, but my amateur eyes tell me that that's been a pretty pedestrian unit this year.
Yeah, we actually mentioned it last week. It's kind of been a B. Like, that's not what you would expect, especially from some of the veteran guys that they have. The left side has been probably the strongest side, but when you have two John Dietzen and Cole Van Lannen, and I thought it was a little bit interesting. I know that this was Rudolph's plan the whole year, but Josh Seltzner started rotating in at left guard in different drives with John Dietzen last week. And I'm sure that's partly to maintain Dietzen's health. But after 2 games of having the same line out there every play, then you start switching around. Maybe that's not helping either. But yeah, I don't think it's been as dominant as you would expect. But I think that it all kind of goes back to they're not getting the same number of rushes to really just kind of pound on some defenses, and then kind of the change ups with the play action passes or, giving them different looks. There's so many things on this offensive line that I think you play more consistently, you get to see different looks more consistently, that would even themselves out. But I'm sure there are times, and especially against Indiana, who's doing a lot of different blitzes and really challenging them mentally and, formationally, where you've got a freshman center playing most of that game, you were at such a disadvantage that doesn't matter quite what they did. They weren't going to be able to be as dominant as you would expect.
Yeah, some guy was not happy that I wrote a Tanner Bordellini sidebar out of the game on Saturday. And I'm like, because, if you watch that, especially the last, he struggled at times getting the ball back.
The snaps, just we're not quite.
And on the last play yep, was one of those times where, he bounced it to Mertz and the guy thought, well, that threw off the play. completely. And yeah, there's probably some truth in that. But my point was, dude, you must have missed the part of the story where I pointed out that he's a true freshman, 287 pounds, who's really never played center. Certainly, yeah. Making his debut at the college level, A, and B, he's doing it in a position that just isn't his natural position. So I'm going to cut him a little slack, yes. And by the way, not just his natural position, that's the toughest position to play
on defensive line.
There's so much involved. And when you've got a defense like Indiana that's blitzing like that, what do you think Tanner Bordellini was thinking on that last play is, oh my gosh, who's coming at me from where? Yeah. And I have to communicate that with the rest of the line. I just, you know, I don't blame him for bouncing the snap back to Graham Mertz.
Yeah, for sure. I think if Cormac Sampson is able to come back from injury this week, earlier in the week, Chris said that it was a little too early to say, but if he's back, I think that helps just from the mental side of it and the consistency part of it. But I think this is a big test week for the offensive line, because you go back and look at the game against Iowa last year, the offensive line, Jonathan Taylor dominated. And that's really why Wisconsin won, because the passing game really didn't have that much success. Iowa came back into that game hitting a big play against the defense that was playing well up until that point. But it really was Jonathan Taylor doing what he did. But then the offensive line just blowing guys off the line. The fullbacks had a huge game getting up to the linebackers. So I can't imagine Iowa comes out in that 44 kind of defense they tried to run all game last year that consistently didn't work. That was one of the weirdest decisions I've ever seen from a Kirk Ferentz, Phil Parker defense, where, hey, this clearly isn't working. Jonathan Taylor has like 180 yards in three quarters. We're just going to keep rolling out. But I can't imagine they do that again. But this is a big thing for the offense. Like, the offensive line needs to control the line of scrimmage and give this offense some chunk plays there, because I don't think you can consistently, rely on the passing game to give it to you.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it has to happen. I just think this it's too tough for this offense to plod along game after game after game. You need some chunk plays. You need something big downfield. You need a guy to break a tackle and turn a 15-yard gain into a, 30, 40-yard gain. It's just, sometimes it just comes down to individual stuff and guys making plays. And I know you need kind of the whole 11. They always talk about 1/11th and you need everybody to do their job. And I think that's true, but you also need some guys to be special at points, and what better time to do it than Saturday in Iowa City.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's jump over to the defense here, because it's going to be a little more positive than the segment we just had on the offense, because this defense is playing, considering what they're getting on the offensive side the last two games, astronomically well. I mean, do you go back to that Northwestern game, to give up five turnovers offensively and to only let up 17 points, that's pretty nuts. And then last week against Indiana, you're down your number one cornerback and then only let up 130 yards passing against that attack. I think that's a huge testament to this defense's preparation and ability to kind of rise up to a challenge. I mean, we talked all week about Ty Freifogel and how good of a season he was having. He had one catch. And, yeah, they got a couple of defensive pass interferences against them on some deep shots. But 15 yards versus potentially 40 or 50, you'll probably give that up as a defense if you have to. He made one catch, and Bob Fillier only had four catches. One was a touchdown. It was a good play by him. But to really slow those guys down was impressive showing by this defense. And you look at what the challenge that they have in front of them here against Iowa, it's kind of what you always expect from Iowa, pretty solid run game, quarterback that's going to be able to, a big arm quarterback that's going to be able to challenge you downfield off play action. I think it matches up well for them. I think this is a game that the defense can realistically say to themselves, hey, as long as we only give up a touchdown, maybe two, we're in the game the whole way, because I think the strengths of this defense match up pretty perfectly with what this offense from Iowa is trying to do.
Yeah, I agree. One quick point, and I don't want to go back to the offense, but I do wonder how much of the offensive play calling is dictated by the fact that this defense is playing so well, and you know you're going to be in the game. So I don't know if conservative is the right word, but I do think you look at this defense and you can rely on it week to week to week. It's been really good. So I do wonder if that's leading to some of the play calling on offense and what they're doing on that side of the ball. If I'm going to nitpick this defense, and it is absolute nitpicking, I would love if they could force some turnovers that are game changing type things. Even like, you know, last year they scored off some turnovers.
Yep.
This team needs that. And that's easier said than done. You can't just design a play to make you score defensively, but if they could possibly do that, if they could up their game that way, I think it would just be huge. I think this team needs a spark that way. And the defense is doing all it can. It's been an A defense. If it can somehow turn into an A plus defense, the timing is necessary, I think.
Yeah. And it's weird because as good as the secondary, or as well as the secondary has been playing, the interceptions just aren't quite there. And yeah. I know they had one against Northwestern overturned for pass interference and things like that. It really does seem like quarterbacks, because they are getting pressure, we're going to get into that in a bit, but they're getting pressure, just not getting sacks. So I feel like a lot of quarterbacks are throwing it away, throwing passes that they know aren't going to be completed anyway, or they're, you know, completing something short, because there just hasn't been a lot of those interceptable balls that Wisconsin's just missing. It's just those opportunities just haven't been there. How do you create some of those? Maybe, I mean, Petras is a guy that's going to trust his arm regardless of the situation. So I think they're going to have some shots this week down the field. I just think that some of those turnovers are probably going to have to be, you know, a strip sack or continuing to create some fumbles, because just the way that the secondary is playing, they haven't been missing those chances to get interceptions, at least in my eyes. And I'm not sure if you're going to have too many against an Iowa team this week that's only passing the ball 18 to 20 times a game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think one point here to make too is I'm sure opposing quarterbacks are being taught and preached all week about, hey, don't take chances.
Yeah. Don't give this defense an extra right. possession, or
because this Wisconsin offense isn't gonna overwhelm you. So, you know, throw the ball away. We'll take our chances, punt the ball, and make them score on us. I'm sure there's a certain, you know, to be conservative offensively for the opponents, because, you know, why take chances at this point?
Yeah. I mentioned a second ago, Spencer Petras, the Iowa quarterback this year. This guy has a rocket. He has he can chuck it. And we talked about it early in the season, because I think it was against Michigan State. It was against who did they lose to first? Purdue. He was chucking the ball 50, 60 yards on the field with relative ease. Didn't quite know where it was going. I think he's starting to rein that in a little bit. I thought this was an interesting kind of note. This is the third first-year starter that Wisconsin's defense is going to play this year. And I guess you could count even Peyton Ramsey, because it's his first year for the Northwestern system. So you can really say it was this could be a fourth. But you talk about Joe Milton from Michigan. You talk about now Spencer Petras. You talk about Jack Tuttle for Indiana last week. They've done really well against these younger quarterbacks. And I think part of that's Jim Leonard being a good defensive coordinator, one of the semifinalists for the Art Briles.
you don't want to be a finalist for that.
No, award. You don't want that award. what's the award? Was it Broyles?
Broyles. Frank Broyles.
Broyles award, yeah, for the top assistant coach. That took a left turn. But one of the top assistants in the country leading a great defense here. The thing for Petras, though, is in the last few weeks, I think he's starting to adopt more of like a conservative, what you more expect from an Iowa quarterback mindset. Like, a ton of his completions are going to be short, off of play action, dumping off to a tight end in the flat, or, you know, 5-10 yards on a curl, things of that, more basic things. But I think a lot of it is trying to lull defenses into sleep where, all right, come up, keep playing those, and then they're going to try to beat you deep. So I think it's a fun challenge, because the other part of it too for Petras is he's got a lot of belief in himself and what he can do with his arm, but he also holds on to the ball forever. Iowa's got a good offensive line, but they've still given up 20 sacks this year. So I think this is the year, or this is the week, that Wisconsin's defense finally gets some of these blitzes home, because we've seen against Northwestern, Indiana, even Michigan, the pressure is getting into the backfield in quarterback spaces. It's just not bringing them down yet.
Yeah, and that goes back to my point of getting there and causing a strip sack and maybe turning that strip sack into something. would be so huge this week. I just think this defense needs to, this offense needs the defense to be even more special than it already is. And so that's my, I guess that's my one gripe about the defense.
No, I hear you there. We I didn't put it on the run sheet here, but just a quick note about the special teams matchup here. Massive advantage for Iowa. Keith Duncan's arguably one of the best field goal kickers in the country this year, or throughout his career. A little bit of a down year this year with four misses, but three of them have been from 50 plus. So that just shows what the Iowa coaches think of him, that he can, they're even, you know, attempting 50 plus yard field goals in college. And then Iowa's got this Australian punter, Torrey Taylor, who is not only leading the country or the conference in field goal, or excuse me, you know, punting average, but I think he's had like two total returns against him. So I in a game where you're going to need some breaks to go your way for Wisconsin to get a spark offensively, I don't think special teams is going to be the unit that gives it to you.
This is the topic for another day, but when's the last time we went into a game saying, wow, what a massive advantage Wisconsin has in special teams?
Yeah, no doubt.
It hasn't happened for a while. It
hasn't been there.
It's a theme of this program to some extent right now.
Like the only time that you would maybe say that was last year when Aaron Cruikshank and the kick return unit really got going later in the season. But but that was just one phase of it. It wasn't, you know, across the board. Like, I think Iowa's got the advantage right now. So definitely something to keep your eye on, because when you're either of these teams, either of these programs have the same relative identity where you're going to play good defense, you're going to run the ball, and you're going to try to control the clock and the field position. When you have the superior punter and kicker that, you know, if Wisconsin, you get across midfield, if you're Iowa and you start feeling like, all right, we can get some points out of this drive. That's not the case for Wisconsin. So I think that's a big thing going into this week, is how the special teams kind of flip this game.
Agree. Jack Van Dyke's been very good, by the way.
He has. Yeah. I mean,
say something nice about the special teams minute here on the podcast. Zach Hinsey was a big threat, a big weapon on kickoffs, and Jack Van Dyke's leg has been impressively powerful.
Yeah. Just don't go off sides when the ball's 9 yards deep into a kickoff, guys. Like, come on, what are we doing here?
That was rough. Unbelievable.
All right. So this week has been kind of altered all around the Big Ten because of the Ohio State Michigan game getting canceled. The Indiana Purdue game is pretty much up in the air. I would say we hear sometime today that that's going to be canceled, because both Purdue and Indiana canceled practice on Tuesday because of COVID tests. And I don't think we've seen a program cancel a practice during the week and then play yet. I'm pretty sure we haven't. So I can't imagine that happens.
Yeah, I agree. I think the likelihood is that game is not played.
Right. So that throws a lot of things into question here regarding the Big Ten championship game. Because when you look at that East Division, Ohio State is undefeated, 5-0, has beaten Indiana, most importantly. And right now, with the Michigan game getting canceled, they're not going to reach the 6-game minimum that the Big Ten set up to be eligible for the Big Ten championship game. So a lot of conversation has been happening in the last 24 hours about, does the Big Ten change the rule if necessary to make sure that Ohio State plays in the Big Ten championship game? Barry Alvarez, UW's athletic director, came out last week and said he thinks they should. The athletic director should change that rule because Ohio State's the conference's only chance at getting into the college football playoff. And he says that they shouldn't deny them that chance because of, you know, kind of a rule that, He didn't call it arbitrary, but it is kind of an arbitrary rule. They wanted to make sure that, you know, some team that was just ravaged by COVID and only got to play one or two games but was undefeated in those one or two games didn't end up being a division champion. So I understood the conceit of the rule. I just think that now that we've gotten through this, there are only four of the 14 teams in the Big Ten are going to play an 8-game schedule, that number might be a little bit too high. So, Jim, just from your perspective, how do you think that the Big Ten is going to and then should handle this whole situation with Ohio State and the Big Ten title game?
It's such a mess. And for like 10 minutes on Tuesday, I think you brought this up on a little chat we have. When Indiana Purdue looked like it was, or when Indiana looked like it was still okay, I think one solution would have been to send Ohio State to Indiana for a rematch.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, if you're Ohio State, you probably don't love that idea because you've already beaten them once. However, my argument is, if that's your only solution, if that's the way to get you to six games, then you have to do it. For Indiana, they would have done it because there's your chance to get in the Big Ten title game and
right.
maybe an outside shot at the playoff if you beat Ohio State impressively enough. And, you know, frankly, the fact that that Ohio State game was played in Columbus the first time around, you know, I just think it would have been fair to have a rematch in Bloomington and see what happens, you know, just play it out. Of course, that went out the door when Indiana tested positive. So I think they're just going to change the rule and say, you don't need to play six games and it's going to look silly. I just don't see what the solution is at this point. You can't, as we know, it comes down to money, and the Big Ten wants that playoff money, especially in a year where revenues are way down across the board. The Big Ten will get a share. All these teams will get a share of that Ohio State playoff money if they get in. So I think it's a no-brainer. I think that's the only solution I see that can be done at this point.
Yeah. So Michigan canceled basically at noon on Tuesday. And if you're Ohio State, realistically, the latest you can reschedule a game would be about noon today, I would say. If you were going to play on Saturday, you would have to have an opponent by middle of the day today to give yourself enough time to game plan, get ready, and do all that stuff. We have seen the Big Ten already deny Nebraska early on in the year when Wisconsin canceled that game, the ability to play a non-conference opponent. There are some pretty big non-conference opponents out there this week that I don't know, they're interested in playing Ohio State because of how good they are. But, you know, there's Coastal Carolina who just did this last week with BYU, mid-season schedule or midweek schedule, and played on Saturday. You've got Texas A&M who's, you know, top five in the AP. And I think they're number six or seven in the college football playoff poll. If they were to beat Ohio State, you know, they massively increase their resume and at least give themselves a shot at the college football playoff, depending on what happens in the next few weeks, because they're not going to be in the SEC title game unless Florida were to lose this week, but I don't see that happening. So there are some options out there non-conference. I just don't imagine that the Big Ten is going to say, we're going to change our rule on the non-conference side that we've already kind of shunned or, you know, slapped Nebraska's wrist about, versus let's just take away this six-game requirement. And I think, not that obviously Ryan Day has a bias here and a vested interest, but Ryan Day said yesterday that the six-game number was made up back in September with the information that we had then. The virus is worse now. Like, right. the number just doesn't quite make sense.
Right, and I do think it's important to kind of add context to how Ohio State got down to five games. two of those games was through no fault of its own, right? I said this before, but if a team loses three games, right?
Yeah, it was. Sorry, I was doing my head. Yeah, you're good.
Yeah. So if a team ends up playing five games and all three of those games were because of outbreaks within its own program, then I don't feel so sorry for it. If eight goes down to five because twice an opponent's had to cancel the game, then I think you add, you know, you give them a little bit of a break. And again, I don't see any way around this other than it's money. And
yeah,
they're not, the Big Ten's going to bend over backward for Ohio State, and everybody's saying it's not fair. Yeah, I get it, but I don't see it. I don't see them saying, nope, you can only play five games and then risk the chance that you don't get in the playoff because the committee looks at Ohio State with only five games and isn't impressed.
Yeah. I don't think anybody outside of Ohio State in the Big Ten, even at a Big Ten championship and another win or two of their resume, is going to get in the playoff. Like, Ohio State is the only Big Ten chance for the playoff. And personally, I think it's got to be an undefeated Ohio State that would have a chance. That if they were to stumble, let's say they rescheduled a game this week with some Big Ten opponent, lost, still won the East, and go beat Northwestern in the championship game, I still think they'd be out. But the thing here is, when this whole setup for the college football playoff, it was supposed to kind of incentivize teams like in leagues that your conference championship matters and make sure that there was some type of weight to the regular season. And I think that was the overall goal. But I feel like this year, why does Ohio State need to go beat a Northwestern team that just got housed by Michigan State? Like, what does that really do for their resume? Like, I think they should try to play as many games as they can to match what some of these other teams are doing. But I don't quite understand this breakneck need for Ohio State to play Northwestern for the college football playoff.
No, you're right. It's just a number. It's not so much a resume or an opponent. It's just, it's going from 5 to 6 or 6 to 7. And you're right. It's kind of silly if you look at it in that context.
Yeah. Just weird. And it kind of goes to the whole, you look around the media in the Big Ten this week. And obviously I follow a ton of them on Twitter and I kind of see it. Everybody's got a column this week about, hey, this is the Big Ten's fault. This is not the Buckeyes' fault. This is not Michigan's fault. This is the Big Ten's fault for not building in bye weeks and potential to move back games and things of that nature. And it's pretty hard to argue with the logic. You look at every college football conference has had COVID cases and issues and had to juggle it around their schedule. But you look at the SEC and the ACC, some of these other conferences, at least they had some flexibility. I think the Big Ten was pretty foolish. I think we said it at the time, and I think that it's kind of borne out here, that they were pretty foolish thinking that 8 games in 8 weeks was going to happen, or even if they knew that 8 weeks in 8 weeks wasn't going to happen, that the teams would all get to 6 and there wasn't going to be these issues that have come up, because with the amount of doctors and everybody that kind of knew what this was going to look like, you know, an outbreak was going to start and it wasn't going to stop in a day. You know, it wasn't just going to be one little batch. It was going to take time for a team to recover and be able to get back. So I think this plan has kind of unraveled on the Big Ten, and maybe they knew it would, but I think it's just an example of they didn't give themselves any, or didn't do themselves any favors when they made this schedule.
Yeah, I agree. I think they probably knew it would. They're probably crossing their fingers that it wouldn't, or that there would be minimal damage. I mean, this goes back to the fact that the reason they're playing is because they figured out the daily testing part of this, which I think was huge. All those other conferences went forward without that part. The Big Ten waited and was more conservative. I didn't really blame them per se. It left them in a position where they had to play basically, you know, 8 consecutive weeks or 9 consecutive weeks. And I think we all knew that was probably not going to happen. I wish there was some czar of the NCAA that would have, you know, stepped forward and said, hey, all of the conferences, let's move this back a little bit. Let's move the playoffs back a little bit. So we do have time at the end of the regular season to shuffle things around. So we are getting closer to a true champion, and it's the Wild West out there. Everybody's kind of in it for themselves, and there's nobody to step forward and say, this is the way we're going to do things. And so you are scrambling. You're really just scrambling to the finish line here.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm obviously looking at things through a Wisconsin lens here. All right, so let's just say that things play out perfectly the next 2 weeks for them, and they beat Iowa and then whoever they play the 19th. They're still, I mean, they have maybe like an outside chance of the New Year's Six Bowl, depending on what happens around them, but probably not. So you get to December 20th and you get the rest of your bowl assignments and things of that nature. You might have 5 or 6 days, maybe, I don't know, or a week or 9 days, something like that. You're going to have way less time for between end of regular season or end of, like, you know, this season and then where your bowl game is. So like the benefits of having the bowls and doing all the stuff, like having that month of practice that we always hear about, like that being such an important developmental time, isn't going to be there again. And I think it just kind of is all like, there's definitely times as I'm working, I just kind of throw my hands up. Like, what are we doing here? Like, what is happening right now?
Well, the whole bowl experience is going to be completely different. I mean, these teams would go down a week early and, you know, practice during the day, and then there'd be events at night, and it's just not going to have that.
No,
it's going to essentially be a neutral site game against another opponent from a big conference, which there's value in that, sure. But it's just, it's going to give us something to do on January 1st or December 30th or whatever. In some cases, some of these bowl games are getting canceled, you know? So, it's not going to be the same this year, and it's going to be different. I mean, like, to your point about missing out on these bowl practices, I do think that's important. I'm thinking the NCAA is going to do something in the spring to extend spring practice to make up for some of this practice time loss. I just think the NCAA will allow that. The coaches are going to make a push for it. I think next spring will be a longer session than it typically would be because of that.
Yeah, I think you're right. All right, Jim, let's jump in and fly through picks here because we're going a little bit long and I want to make sure we get some time for basketball here. So jumping into our Big Ten picks, we got, we think, six games right now. We mentioned Purdue and Indiana is probably going to get canceled, but we have it on the slate here to begin with. So we got Rutgers at Maryland this week. Maryland is an 8-point favorite. That doesn't quite make sense to me. I know Rutgers just did not look very good last week, but 8 points is a lot for Maryland to lay. So we are both on Rutgers. I just don't think that you can bet on Maryland to blow people out right now.
No, and I'm big on continuity this week, and Rutgers has played more games, and that's part of why I went. You know, I just think they can keep this game close.
Yeah, no, I like that reasoning. All right, so we got Minnesota coming back from missing two games off of COVID, going to Nebraska. Nebraska is a 10.5-point favorite. The last number that I saw was that Minnesota is going to be without like 40-ish players, assuming that they can play. I mean, I think it's still questionable that Minnesota's able to play this week. I know they say they're going to, but we are both on Nebraska. We don't know what Minnesota's going to look like. Nebraska's at least going to have a real team out there.
Yeah, those numbers are crazy. I can't believe they're playing this game. I really can't. I'm interested to see how it plays out, where the numbers are. I just think at some point, I talked about this in an earlier podcast, it gets down to a safety issue. If you're down to third string linemen, you're putting your quarterback and other players in unsafe positions. If you're playing a true freshman at linebacker or cornerback or whatever, before he's really equipped to play at this level, you're putting him in a tough spot. When you say you throw your hands up over the what we're doing, I mean, this is a prime example of that. It seems like this this team isn't ready to play a game, but you know, apparently they're going to.
Yeah, and they keep pushing to play Wisconsin on December 19th. And yes, everybody wants to play the Axe game. And I totally understand that, and I like that just because the rivalry is cool, and there's a lot more interest in that. But I don't want Wisconsin to go play a team down 30-ish players. Like, well, even if they get some back next week, like, well, what is the value for either team in that? I don't know. Outside of just the history of the rivalry, it just doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I agree.
All right, so next game we got here is Illinois going to Northwestern. Northwestern coming off a week off. Northwestern is a 14-point favorite against the Illini. And I don't know why Illinois looked bad after coming out hot against Iowa, but I'm just picking Illinois. I don't know. I don't like Northwestern's offense. To come back from that big Wisconsin win and lose to Michigan State really has me down on Northwestern as a whole. I know their defense is great. That's not really the issue. I just don't think Northwestern's going to be able to score a ton of points. I'm going to go with Illinois plus 14.
Yeah, this is a tough one for me. I took Northwestern only because I'm so down on Illinois from last week after, you know, thinking they would cover against Iowa. But I'm absolutely not confident about this pick.
Yeah. Illinois let up 35 unanswered to Iowa last week. That was not pretty. So let's jump into the next one here. We got Purdue at Indiana. As we've mentioned a couple of times, could be canceled. We'll find out probably later today. But Indiana is a 10-point favorite as of now. We are both on the Hoosiers. Purdue has just looked dreadful. I know they've got a backup quarterback situation, but when you got Rondell Moore and David Bell out there, the fact that they haven't been able to put up some points more consistently just is very strange to me. So I'm on Indiana.
Yeah, I think I said this to you at the game last week. I think I've picked Purdue to cover every week, and they've burned me every week. So I'm off that train.
I'm with you. All right, so next one, we got Michigan State going to Penn State. Penn State is a 15.5-point favorite, coming off a couple of wins here late in the year. We're both on Penn State. I just think that James Franklin knows how miserable the season has been. And if he gets a chance against a pretty bad Michigan State team, he's going to run it up and try to get his team feeling good going into the last couple of weeks here. I just don't see Michigan State hanging in this one.
Yeah, me neither. I think Penn State for once is finally trending in the right direction and has figured some things out. And I just – Michigan State's a tough one. They've had two really, I guess I would call them impressive wins this year. But if you look in every other game, they've been pretty god awful. So expecting that this week.
Yeah, I like that. All right. So then the last game, Wisconsin going to Iowa. This is a weird line. All right. So it started on Sunday. Iowa favored by one. Right now, or at least when I got these lines last night, Wisconsin is a 1.5 point favorite. I'm just playing trends here. There is no way Wisconsin's offense is that bad 3 weeks in a row. I know we went through that whole thing about how they don't have an identity and all the injuries and all that stuff like that. I just think that they figure something out this week. I'm going to take Wisconsin.
Okay, Wisconsin has owned this series, so I think that they have that going for them. Although, if you look at it from the other perspective, is I'm sure Iowa desperately, urgently wants to win and finally, you know, get that stupid trophy they play for in this series. To me, I picked Iowa simply. It really came down to simple things. This team's trending in the right direction. Wisconsin is not, and I have a hard time believing that Wisconsin will pull it together for this one. But you know, again, they've had the edge in this series, and I could see them winning a 17-13 type game, something like that. I've harped on this the entire podcast, but I think if it's going to happen, there needs to be a defensive touchdown or a turnover that sets up a really, really short field for Wisconsin. I just think this Wisconsin offense needs as much help as they can get right now.
No, I'd agree with all that. Why the Heartland Trophy hate?
I don't know. I don't, there's so many trophies now as part of it. And it's just like, there's the axe is the axe. And I like that. It's been going for so long and it's just, I don't know. It's.
Well, that's fair.
I have nothing against pigs or whatever.
Well, hold on. Time out here. It's a bull.
Oh yeah. It's a bull.
But hold on. Cole Van Lannen did that.
He said pig.
Yeah, Cole Van Lannen said pig on Sunday.
Maybe that's too. The problem.
Yeah, and I saw some Iowa, I can't remember what site it was, but I saw an Iowa reporter or internet reporter tweet about, like, wait, they're calling it a pig? So I'm like, is this like a point of contention in the Wisconsin community if this is a bull or a pig? I don't know.
I think either it's just confusion.
Yeah, that's fair. All right, let's jump into basketball here. Jim, as we mentioned at the top of the show, is supposed to go to the Kohl Center today to watch Wisconsin take on Rhode Island. But before we look into that, we got to talk about this Marquette loss. It seems like, God, it was a long time ago, but it was only Friday. Marquette wins on a tip-in off a free throw. I'm sure that film is burned in Micah Potter's brain because just as the biggest guy on the team and, you know, kind of the a pretty good fundamental player overall. So the mix of the box out there and end up costing you the game. I'm just a brutal beat there. Just from a general perspective though, Jim, you've seen these games for 20-ish years now. Does it seem like Marquette takes this rivalry a little bit more seriously or kind of has more invested than Wisconsin?
Yeah, to some degree, I think it does. It's always, there's been a couple of games during my time on the beat where it's like, Marquette just has played harder where you've had two pretty even teams in terms of talent and Marquette's just kind of played harder and wanted it more, quote unquote. And I thought they played harder the other night. I think there was a million ways Wisconsin could have won that game and a million things they could have done different. But I do think ultimately Marquette played harder at times and that was one of the determining factors. I'd kind of, for my first run, I'd written a part of, or at the topper to a story. And it was a Brad Davison quote about how they're treating this like any other game. And they use it as kind of a measuring stick, a way to, you know, we want to get better every day. And this will be another sign of if we get better every day, which I think is fair. It's kind of always how this program's operated. But I do think on Marquette's side, they look at this as a huge rivalry. And also they were coming off a loss to Oklahoma State. I think there was some urgency there to kind of not drop two games in a week. And so I guess I wasn't surprised that they came out and were more aggressive and I don't think Wisconsin matched that and still could have made up for it. Like I said, you look at that last play, Potter could have done a better job of boxing out. Aleem Ford should have pinched a little bit better. Greg Gard said there was some luck involved. The free throw was so short that it bounced back enough to give Lewis a chance to tip the ball in. So Demetri Trice should not have tried to take a charge there. That was just, that timing was poor. And it just, there was a lot of reasons that they lost that game. And you know, frankly, I know it sucks to lose to a rival. I don't think it's the worst thing in the world that you lose, that you learn those lessons early in the season and it sticks with you a little bit and it hurts, because better now, I say, than against Michigan State on Christmas Day or against Iowa or Illinois down the road. Those games mean a little bit more. And I'll agree with Brad Davison there. They're playing for a Big Ten championship this year. They're not playing for a rivalry win in early December.
No, that's totally fair. And I mean, it was the most frequently used joke on Twitter, but it was like just poetic justice that Wisconsin ends up losing because they try to draw a charge, right? And yeah, the rough thing is that Trice was there. Like, there was, he was in good position. He was going to defend the wild shot that the guy was going to have to put up anyway. So that was a tough.
Carton was going away from the basket. I mean, at best, he gets off a maybe 18-foot off-balance shot. Makes that, you tip your cap, but you don't put the referee. The referees absolutely hate being put in the position of having to make the block or charge call. And you know, you made the ref do that at the key moment of the game.
Right, right. So you guys can go on Madison.com and read Jim's story about this. And it does a good job of really explaining how this all came together. But can you just kind of summarize what happened this week with this program and how this Rhode Island game came to be? Because it's like everybody's gearing up for the Big Ten ACC Challenge. We saw Tuesday night, Iowa gets a big win over North Carolina. Illinois beats up Duke at Cameron. That was a really impressive game. Wisconsin's about to go play Virginia Tech, right? And then all of a sudden, it's like, that's not happening. What's that?
Louisville,
excuse me. Yeah, Louisville. And then all of a sudden, that's not happening, and Rhode Island's coming here. See you Wednesday.
Yeah, so I kind of forecast this to some degree with a story I did early the first week of the season on how Wisconsin had finally gotten the schedule into place. It took forever for the Big Ten and UW to get a schedule out. They finally got the schedule into place. And now comes the hard part, is completing it as written. And in four games in the season, we've seen how hard that is. You know, we knew about Louisville's COVID issues last Thursday night already. They had to cancel Friday's game against UNC Greensboro. So I think Wisconsin knew that, okay, there might be a problem here with this Louisville game. What can we do? And Greg Gard's position is, I don't want to go the entire week without playing a game. I don't want to go from Friday against Marquette to two Wednesdays later against Northern Iowa. That's like 12 days between games, and he didn't want to do that. I understand why. So Wisconsin started looking for games. And, you know, silly me, I thought they would, once I heard they were going to play a game midweek at home, I kind of looked around schedules like of teams that were within busing trips, because that's kind of what they said they were going to do, is, you know, look for teams that could bus here on a whim. And I was looking for schedule. You know, I was looking, UW-Milwaukee was booked, Green Bay was booked. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all these schools that were booked. As it turned out, Rhode Island sent an email to Mark Van De Wettering, the UW guy in charge of scheduling. And that kind of got the ball rolling. Van De Wettering goes to Gard and says, what do you think of Rhode Island? Gard approves it Saturday night. And when the Louisville game does get canceled, Rhode Island slips into the schedule. And all things considered, it's a pretty solid opponent on short notice. Mm-hmm. Rhode Island probably wouldn't have got the NCAA tournament last year, but was on the bubble. They won 21 games. Pretty good team this year so far. They've got a team that will test Wisconsin in the areas it needs to be test, athletic, good guards. So, you know, it's a top 100 Ken Pom opponent on short notice. I think,
yeah, that's, on a whim, just kind of plucking it out of the air.
Right. Cause I think what the Marquette game showed is that Wisconsin needs more of these types of games to prepare themselves for Big Ten play. So I don't think, you know, you could have brought in another team. Like I said before, Green Bay was one of the fallback plans. Playing them twice in the non-conference season was an option if Wisconsin really got desperate. But I don't think it's an option Wisconsin wanted to do. I think they want to play a more challenging opponent. So here we are with Rhode Island, and knock on wood, I hope that game gets played. And then I hope the Louisville game is still a possibility. Like Greg Gard said, it would be Sunday night at the earliest. I don't know how realistic that is, but I think they're at least keeping open the option of playing that game later in the week.
Yeah. To your point, like, you need this test against more athletic teams. I mean, yeah, what are you going to learn? Beating up on Green Bay again. Just it's not really in the same class. I watched quite a bit of the Iowa and the Illinois games yesterday. We know that the Big Ten is just going to be a gauntlet, but it is just a significant style difference. And I went back or went through the Wisconsin look or a schedule and looked like there are going to be weeks where they play Iowa on a Wednesday, then the following Wednesday or the following Saturday they play Illinois. And it's like those are such a different and better styles and difficult styles to defend than what you're seeing right now, especially if you're playing some of those lesser opponents. So being able to play a team that's, you know, a more legitimate or higher level, I guess, Division One than Green Bay is or something like that, or maybe like, I know, Eastern Illinois, same kind of way. But just preparing yourself for the Big Ten for this gauntlet that's going to be – it's got to be your number one focus if you're guard. And then your number two thing here right now is like just getting yourself healthy enough into the Big Ten schedule. Because I think basketball, not only because of the math, like you would know better than I, Jim, but like, what is it, like two guys basically in your program, then you got to shut down for a week?
Well, I mean, there's no hard, fast rule, but really one guy would do it.
Yeah.
Because of contact tracing. Like, you know, it's just, if one guy gets it, you have to really examine who he's all been around. And in basketball, it's tough. I mean, they're out there without masks on during practice. They're in locker rooms. You can take all the mitigation things you want to do, but it's tough. So that's why you've seen like a positive test is putting programs on pause, because there's a lot to do to figure out, do we have a bigger problem than just one guy right now?
Yeah. And I know I mentioned this last podcast, and I'm sure I'm being annoying about it, but it's like, I'm on the train. Like, yeah, play Louisville if you can sometime here, but like, don't mess around with some of these other games and affect conference season. Or like, let's say it got to a point where Wisconsin was down, let's say a Brad Davison or somebody in key in the rotation, and has to play a couple of Big Ten games without him. Like, that's putting you in a hole that could make it impossible to win a Big Ten championship. And you don't want that.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It's such a tricky thing right now, because if Louisville does get canceled, if Northern Iowa does get canceled, you know, if the game against Nebraska got canceled, let's say they somehow play Northern Iowa, but then don't play Nebraska on the 21st, then you're 9 days between games before the Michigan State game on the 25th, which is a huge game. Mm-hmm. So I think for Greg Gard, you want to build some sort of rhythm going into those important games. And yet you're right, you don't want to be reckless about it and lose a key player or two going into those games or going into the Big Ten season. It's just, I, you know, it's gotta be a nightmare to be a coach this season, having to make these decisions. And that's why they're doing it on the fly. Like Saturday, Greg Gard was basically, his phone would ding and it'd be a message from Mark Van de Wettering saying, we got to talk, because there's all these opponents. Like what we didn't even mention, Colton, is that there was the possibility that they would go to Indianapolis on Tuesday to play against UConn, which for whatever reason they didn't schedule. And then it turned out to be a blessing because UConn had to go on pause.
Yeah.
There was talk about kind of reigniting the Tennessee series. They were supposed to open the season against Tennessee before all this stuff hit. And now there was talk about maybe playing that game at some point and moving around the Big Ten schedule to make that happen. And it's like, man, like these decisions, I don't know what, there's no right or wrong. And then you can do what you think is the right thing, and it turns out to be the wrong thing through no fault of your own. So it's a headache. It's a nightmare. And, you know, week by week, you're just hoping you can get some games played and keep everybody healthy.
Yeah. Just crazy, man. And the tough thing is, this is from a roster and from a depth of the conference standpoint. I mean, we see it, I think, what is it, 6-1 or 7-1 for the Big Ten right now in the Big Ten SEC Challenge. I mean, this is going to be one of the best Big Ten seasons in a long time. And God help us if we can get through it, right? Like that's what you're just hoping for. But as we start wrapping up the show here, I will be going down to Iowa. Jim's going to be helping cover virtually for the weekend. So make sure you're following both of us on Twitter, CBAR WSJ for me, and then Jim Polzine WSJ for Jim. I don't know if you know this, Jim. I lived in Iowa for junior high and high school. Just not a fan. Got to say, I live in the Quad Cities, about 45 minutes outside of Iowa City. I'm glad I've lived in Wisconsin since for college and everything else. Much prefer the vibe up here.
Huh, I didn't know that. I did not know that until you gave me the pre-show notes. So good luck going home. You're going to like Kinnick. You'd like a lot more if the crowd was there. It is one of my favorite places to cover a game. It's a good atmosphere when fans are there. It's always a good game. This rivalry has been really, really good. But good luck.
Yeah, thank you. We'll see a lot of punts. That's my bold prediction. We are going to see like a dozen punts at least in this game. So
these coaches do like to punt.
They're not afraid. Trot them out there. So we'll see how it all goes. Make sure you're on Madison.com reading all our stories. We got a ton of basketball coming this weekend or tonight even. You can read on Madison.com, and then lots of more football stuff coming this weekend and throughout the week. So for Jim Polzine, I am Colton Bartholomew. Thank you very much for listening.